Psy 2013. So I'm supposed to lecture on complex analysis. I'm going to do no such thing. I'm going to make you read lecture notes and try to have discussions in class. Did you guys have a look at the lecture notes? Okay, I'm going to trust you on that today because I did not have time to prepare the quiz. In other schools, no one would expect students to learn to read their lecture notes, unless they were threatened with a quiz. So most of you have seen a lot of this before, but some of you haven't, and it's really useful to go over this, even when you think you've seen stuff like this. It's actually useful to refresh your memory. And also, there's the excitement of teaching your fellow students. So I don't really know what I'm going to do today in terms of format. So what I was thinking of doing is that doing some more problems, some problems in class, and or setting some problems on the blackboard and having you discuss it amongst yourself. Like trying it by yourself first, and then if you're not making headway or you don't know how to start, discussing the person next to you. So this requires that nobody sits by themselves. So if there's like a gap between, please do mind the gap. But before we do that, I think we should decrease the temperature of the room a little bit. Maybe it's just me cycling all the way here, but it's 25 degrees. This is unbelievable. And we are not alligators, right? Or snakes. Yes, let's start with questions. You already asked me some stuff, but let's start with the basic stuff and then we can go to the towards the end. How about that? Okay, now, if you think that your question is something that you're shy to ask, one trick is to ask the question not to the whole class, that is not to me, but to ask your neighbor. And if you can get satisfaction that way, you're fine. So why don't you guys just if you have any things to discuss, why don't you just discuss it amongst yourselves? So okay, I'm trying a very unorthodox way of teaching because I believe that if I write on the blackboard and you write on a piece of paper, it feels very satisfying because at the end of an hour you have 10 pages of paper that you'll never read again. But it really doesn't serve the purpose. You're not really thinking as much as you can during the class hour. So, and I have never done this before, so I'm kind of bravely sort of going where no Psy fellow has gone before. So that's the motivation. If you have more questions about this method of teaching or suggestions, please come and talk to me. I'm more than happy to. Well, yeah, that's why I'm doing this. So I'll just kind of give you guys 5 minutes to kind of talk amongst yourselves if you have questions from reading the notes, okay? While I drink my coffee. I love this way of teaching. Yeah.
What did you use to make these images?
Oh, Xfig.
They have a hard time loading in PDF.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
Oh.
like so it's not
You'll have to do something. You're not having a problem, right? Oh, that PDF is huge. That's mathematical. I'm sure they have billions of types. Oh yeah, of course. Right. Thank you. Exactly. That's good.
And the reason why it's urgent is that's the point around.
Okay, wait, so how do you do that?
If you just, for example,
For
every integer you get every time you go around, you go up, or you go down.
You just use your PI model. It's not working? Okay, well, you have to try again and again and again. So you're trying to do the generalization for? I think algebraic is very easy, but not really good. Algebraic is very easy. Geometrically, it's easy to see in this case. But I'm sure there's a better way of doing this, but algebraic is just an online proof.
Branch point is something that will only show up when we close the calculation. It's like already. Obviously, you will get the same set from many different points of calculation. And you can always
Yeah, the omega is the first one. So, okay.
That's like a discontinuous jump. And that means there's some branch point inside of this.
And that's zero.
How do you find the branch point?
Inside.
Yeah, this thing is
but you can trivially see behind the origin. Because you can.
So this is not even given geometric error. But I couldn't really see it for the real thing. There should be some better way of looking at it. But
and it's because
this is the easiest one. <part. laughs> And be
the argument
so this only works, I think, for. I haven't thought about it. Like, you can try variations of it. you're saying, what if it's not a cube root of UDT, but something else? There will be some other identity absolute. So that's why I think it's worthwhile to look at it geometrically, because in the case of the cube root of minus 1, this is also true, because the cube is metabolic. And you can see that that has to be true just by inspection, because it's a flip around the y axis. And, right, so, and you know, there will be an okay. So, did any of you get answers to some questions? Did any of you in this discussion get anywhere? Okay. Yes? How many yeses? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So yeah, that's great. I don't have to teach. I can leave now. Okay. So let's, okay, before we delve into the details, let's talk some, like, you know, some hand-waving stuff, which is always fun. We come to do physics because of the hand-waving stuff, right? Not because, so why, so I listed a couple of reasons why I think complex analysis is so fascinating from the point of view of physics, right? And one of the things that I listed was that the Schrodinger equation, it's a complex equation, right? So so have you seen kind of a, do you think quantum mechanics would work if there were no I's in the Schrodinger equation, if it was a real equation, right? Do you think it would, what kind of equation would it be? What does it look like when? Sorry? It's a diffusion equation, right? So, which is something that we see, say, in heat, you know, well, any time there's diffusion. And diffusion equations are not time reversible, right? So we know that, but we know that microscopic processes are time reversible. And how do you see this? Like, how do you get this from the Schrodinger equation? So if you write the usual time-dependent Schrodinger equation, I had to look this up because I get all the minus signs wrong. So usually, well, we choose V, the potential function, to be some real function. So if we take t to minus t, we get a completely different equation, right? And that's because there is, this is first order in time. However, so let's call this star. However, if we take star and take the complex conjugate of this, then we get the same equation, but for this guy, right? So the heuristically, what I'm trying to say is that the ability to be able to time reverse depends crucially on the fact that we can also do the complex conjugate, take the complex conjugate of the Schrodinger equation, right? So over the years, you know, whenever I learn something new, which involved complex analysis, like a fundamental application of complex analysis to physics, I kind of, you know, I noted that because I think that that's a really fascinating thing. Quantum mechanics. So yesterday a lot of you talked about your interest in quantum foundations and quantum information. And the more, when you learn more about this field, you'll see that there is that there are people out there who work on version of quantum mechanics which is on the reals, like what would the world look like if you were not allowed to take linear combinations with complex coefficients? What if quantum mechanics, what if you, people are trying to do quantum mechanics over the reals? Whereas, you know, we do quantum mechanics over the complex numbers, right? And it looks like a completely different world. So that's a very fundamental. I feel like, you know, in classical physics, you know, the application of quantum of complex numbers is more like an elegant thing. You know, it's like a technique. It's not an essential feature of the fabric. But when you come to quantum mechanics, it becomes integral to the whole thing. And I also mentioned about string theory. In string theory, the path integral, the fundamental path integral in string theory is, you probably have seen something like this. You know, this is like a, you know, depends on the, it's like a Feynman diagram. And in perturbation theory, there are higher order of these things. So I'm drawing a Feynman diagram for a very particular theory, a cubic theory. Anyway, so what happens is that in string theory, these guys get replaced by two-dimensional surfaces. You know what I mean. And it turns out these two-dimensional surfaces are closely related to something called Riemann surfaces. That is, these two-dimensional surfaces, when you analytically continue to imaginary time, you'll see a lot of this in your quantum field theory course, that these guys are actually, they are basically, you know, there's complex functions defined on these. These are, so you actually have to sum over the kind of complex structures, the complex, you know, metrics that you can put on these guys. So, you know, there's a really, really fundamental application of complex numbers in string theory. Now, I'm not an expert, or I don't know much about quantum theory, loop quantum gravity, I'm sure that, you know, the path integral of loop quantum gravity is also something that essentially uses complex numbers. So that was my, what, 2 cents. Anybody else who kind of has some things, has, you know, complex numbers plays a really nice, cool role in physics somewhere? I'm supposed to give you 15 seconds. Yes, Nicole.
I just came up with areas where complex numbers, as you said, are used as a tool instead of a fundamental assumption.
Right.
Like in one way to solve the classical charge in a magnetic field problem is to define a complex function of your coordinates, so that shows a nice solution.
Anybody else? Yes?
Yeah, we'll do something related to the phase oscillation or phase something.
Right.
Doing compact space function.
In what compact spaces?
I just say in complex wave. Yeah.
Oh, complex wave.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I mean, this is basically interference quantum mechanics.
Yeah.
It's related to the fact that it's a complex wave function. So the interference patterns that you get are very specific to that, right? Yes.
Well, you can describe both absorption and refraction in material by
right, that's very nice, elegant, yeah. Anyway, I don't have to motivate complex numbers to you guys, I'm sure. So maybe we can, anybody else has a, is anything to, any? Yeah, like some cool application you came across.
Using for rotations.
Right, yeah, exactly, and that's deeply related to the Euler formula, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which we will see, you know, because Euler formula, yeah. I mean, in the notes I mentioned this, probably it's a legend, you know, this confrontation with Denis Diderot and Euler, because Euler used the Euler formula as a proof of God's existence. Right? So, yeah, Diderot probably knew a lot of mathematics because, you know, he, as you know, he was the first encyclopedist as well as a novelist. You know, so probably this is not a real story, but. Okay, so let's go and ask some questions. So anybody had some questions from the basics that are still not? Yes, Deanna, right? Yes. Oh, right. Okay. So so it's kind of getting a bit ahead, but maybe we can just. So your question is, how do we do the cut?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll have a tutorial about this today in the afternoon, but let's just deal with it even now. We'll just get a repetition there. So the first thing to see is that we have a branch point around. So for, say, square root of z, right? We see that it's really around the origin that, so if you go around 2 pi, we come up to the negative of what was originally the value here, right? So what if we go around a little circle which doesn't go around the origin? Do we go first? You have to convince yourself that we actually do not, we get back to the same value. So it's, so the first thing to do is to identify the branch point. And in this case, the branch point is at the origin. Okay, now the branch point doesn't have to be at the origin. For example, if you took the function, I think something like this, right? Then the branch point would be at z equals to 1 on the real line. Yes?
So, is there any way to define the branch point for the simple?
Sorry?
Is there any general way to define it?
Well, I mean, for a very general definition, you have to look up in a textbook. Here, I'm not the person to ask. I work on intuition. I'm not a mathematician, you know, but I'm sure there is. But the idea is that you find a point around which, you know, a closed loop does not take you back to the, you know, there's some non-trivial holonomy or something, you know, something. I don't know if mathematicians call it holonomy or monodromy, something like that. Anyway, but anyway, the idea is, so you have, once you have identified this, you know, I did the cut in the lecture notes along the x-axis and the negative x-axis, right? It didn't have to be there. What's important is that it went off to infinity. Now, something that I haven't talked about yet, but we'll talk about it tomorrow, is that this this function also has a branch point at infinity. So the point at infinity, you can, like, so if you think of the complex plane, and if you go off in some direction, at infinity there's this huge circle, right? So all these points can be identified to one point, and all these points can be identified to one point, and it's called the point at infinity. And this has a very beautiful geometric interpretation, which we'll see in the tutorial today, in terms of stereographic projection of a sphere. So We won't do the detail here, but let me just tell you shortly. What happens is that you take a sphere and you project any point on the sphere, you draw a line to the North Pole, and you continue until the point hits a point on the plane, two-dimensional plane that the sphere is sitting on. And for example, this point can have its polar coordinates, theta and phi, and you can relate those angles to the coordinates on this plane, which you can identify as the complex plane. So now if you do that, you see that when you go towards the North Pole, the point gets projected farther and farther onto the two-dimensional plane, right? And the point, like that little circle around the North Pole, gets projected onto a really large circle on the complex plane. So the limit of this is that the point on the North Pole gets projected to all these points. You know, it's kind of a definition that that's how you define the point of the North Pole. But this is going a little bit too far. But one thing you've seen that in your elementary complex analysis classes that some, you know, you to look at the point at infinity, you basically say you define a new coordinate, say omega, which is 1 over z, right? And then you say, what does this, then you say that we are going to examine the function in this new variable as omega goes to 0, which would correspond to z going to infinity. And then you see that this guy has, so if you omega r prime e to the power I theta prime by 2, then you see that your function becomes this thing, right? So this becomes, again, something like this. So the point at infinity is also a branch point. So that's the other fit. So if you drew a little circle around the point at infinity, which basically means you're drawing a little circle around here, you know, you would basically, this function would be double valued there. Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah, you're right. Thank you. Somebody's awake. So you had a. Sorry?
I mean, when you do the stereotype.
Right.
Projection, actually, the sphere is the S2.
Right.
And the complex thing actually is R.
Right, right. The topology is different.
But
yeah.
When at this infinitive point, you make it actually you're doing
compactifying it. Right. I'm making. No, it's not a complex plane. It's complex plane plus this point at infinity.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's. There's the topology when you add the point at infinity is different. You're right. Anyway, let's not go into the details of this because we are going to discuss this in the tutorial today, okay, in detail. But let's come back to Diana's question. So now we know that there is a branch point at the origin and a branch point at the infinity, right? And now the branch cut just joins these two points. It can be any line as long as it doesn't intersect itself. And oops. Oh my God, this duster is trying to kill me. So, you know, we have something like, you know, this is what I drew. But it could have been something like that. And you just take two complex planes, and you cut along some arbitrary line, which starts from the origin, goes off to the infinity, and you glue them together, and that's it. This would do as well as this one. In fact, in Mathematica, you can actually specify the different branch cuts, and I think Pedro will probably talk about that. So, does that answer some of your questions? Some? Okay. So again, you can repeat your question, it's like, finding that curve. Yeah, all you need to do is to have a curve that joins these two points and that doesn't intersect itself. Right. And because on the complex plane, all the points at infinity are identified, if you add the point at infinity, this curve can go from the origin in any direction. It didn't have to go in the negative x-axis. It could have gone in any direction. Okay. Yes.
Functions with branch points are obviously not continuous and therefore not functions in the strictest sense. Just thinking about.
Okay, I'm not going to even go there.
Why would a discontinuous function not be a function?
Well, it's not like it's a function, yes, sure. It's not just it's got problems, it's got issues, that's all I mean, So. Yes. Okay. Right. Right. I don't know. Give me a function, maybe I can try. Did you look at the log? So.
That is, you can actually express that in the directed expression. I mean, you put it in the polar coordinates, and if you get
right.
It out, and you can easily see that. But if you cannot do that, so how do you find it?
Right. So can you come up with a function which has, I think this is something non-trivial in general. So. Sorry? 1 over log z. Minus 1. So you're saying what is the, where is it? I don't know. It's just, so. Sorry? Where are the brackets? That's what he means, yes. So.
Where is it log of z minus 1 or log of z?
It should somewhere.
Is this what you mean? Is this what you mean?
Yeah.
Right, it's the same. Right. Sorry. I think we can play this game for a very, very long time, right? So, so first part of today's tutorial is basically us, trying some not like this, but some, more. Not logarithmic functions, but some other functions, more complicated functions, and trying to find the branch points and the branch cuts for those functions. So maybe we can have this, have a a longer discussion about this during that. And so, yeah, you won't get any, sorry, I'm not going to give you any sort of, you know, general definition or algorithm for, you know, how to find the most general solution. I can try, I can give you hints, but I can, but, you know, you have to, a lot of times you have to come up with your own answer. So, because a lot of the questions I'll come across in this discussion is, I'm coming across them for the first time in my life, right? So, you know, they're as mysterious to me as they are to you. So, yes? They are there? Okay, maybe you can look them up before tutorial today. Yeah, well, I don't know if, like PI, if PI has some of the textbooks, you can look at PI. Like, it's not the best mathematics library, in my opinion, but then. Okay, anybody else? Yes. Remind me your name again. Alex? Okay. Right. Exactly. So no, that's, yeah. We are getting ahead of ourselves. I didn't mention holomorphic. Okay, so okay, some people had, okay, so there are the obvious typos. Okay, maybe I, so I have some problems that I can probably set, we can talk about. So, okay, any more questions? More fundamental questions, like, you know, I don't know how to add complex numbers type of questions. Yes? Okay. Sure, yeah, that's very nice, actually. So the first thing to note is that if you take, say, a complex number, and you, so this has some, you know, if we use the Euler formula, right, something like this. So, so now suppose that we just multiply this with, right? So then this new number is going to be R cosine of So this multiplying with this phase doesn't change the length or the modulus of this number. It just changes the angle that it makes with the x-axis, right? And it's obvious that it's rotating it by, it's shifting it by another angle phi. So you should be clear that multiplying with this just rotates this complex number by the angle phi. So if I take, so if I now take some complex number z1 and multiply it with z2, then we get, suppose, okay, z1 is r1 e to the power I theta 1, and z2 is r2 e to the power I theta 2, then this is going to be r1 r2 e to the power I theta 1 plus theta 2. So multiplying by a general complex number not only rotates it, but also scales it. Z1 gets like stretched by, stretched or shrunk by a factor R2, as well as rotated, right? So now if we come to the picture where we have two complex numbers, Z1 here, and another one, Z2. So this is 0, suppose this is 1. So now if we so multiply the number 1 by z2, that just rotates 1 to this by this angle, right? And stretches it. Basically, it takes 1 to this. Now, if you multiply 0, it doesn't do anything. So if you multiply z2, then you get z1, z2. So, but you're rotating, the important thing is that you're rotating z2 by the same angle that you rotated 1 by. So the angle between 1 and z2 is equal to the angle between z2 and z1 times z2. Okay. So, the other thing is that the length of this guy, of this side of this triangle, is scaled by the modulus of this number, right? The length of this side is scaled by the same modulus of the same number. Right? So the ratio of these two sides is equal to the ratio of these two sides. So therefore, these two triangles are similar. Okay, any more basic questions? Or more, I would say, fundamental. Because this is an example of a conformal mapping. Just a very simple example of a conformal mapping that we'll see maybe tomorrow. Who was it who said that they thought physics was motivated to study physics because of group theory? Was it you, Jenny? Okay, yeah. So, yeah, I was just thinking about it. You'll see a lot of group theory this year. Like, in fact, particle physics, I just wanted to mention, particle physics is one huge application of group theory. It's not just group theory, but I think group theory finds its real, you know, expression in physics, in quantum field theory, particle physics. And if I get the time, I will actually talk about the group of transformation of a complex plane and a torus as well. So there's lots of group theory in complex numbers as well. The specific, okay, right. Anything else? Okay, so let's just then do some very simple this is gonna be, you probably know this, and this is gonna sound very look very silly, but can you calculate this? I to the power 4002 without using your calculator. And even if you know the answer, just don't tell me. Just, you know, keep it in your head. I want everyone to have a go. Okay, so it can be one of two values, right? So I squared is minus one, I to the power four is plus one, right? So it can either be plus one or minus one, right? So which one is it? Minus one, right? Okay. And, okay. So that was very simple. Let's see. Oh, yeah, this is nice. Suppose alpha is a real number. Then can you prove this without writing down any equations? You can, right. So if you can, then I would like you to talk to your neighbor and see if they're okay with that. And, you know, basically, you know, help your neighbors. So, or if somebody is having problem seeing that, just, you know, or... So this is taking the complex conjugate, you reflect it along the x-axis.
Yeah, it doesn't
change. Yeah, so. So these simple exercises just help you kind of, you know, get more idea, feeling for the geometric stuff. So that's the idea. Okay. So did everyone get it? So does anyone want me to go over this? No? Great. You know, teaching like this, even a robot can teach, because okay, now let's try get to see some how to express from some curves using complex numbers. So what do you think this is? A circle of radius 2, right? What about this guy? What's the radius of the circle? Where are the origin? 3 and 0, right? So, where is the center? Sorry, not the origin. Circles don't have origin, they have centers. Where is the center of this circle? So at x equals to 1 and y equals 2. -1 and -i, right? Okay, so this is too simple for you guys, obviously. Okay, now this is one I'd like you to discuss, like think about yourself. And once you've thought about it for a few minutes, you know, talk to somebody and see in your, you know, see if you can convince them of your answer or if you need help. Or so what is the locus of this expression? Okay, so think about it for a minute and then, well, more than a minute. Okay, what are the points that satisfy this equation on the complex plane? What are the set of points? Locus or loci, loci. I don't know how to pronounce that word. Loci, right? The plural of locus. So if you are going to talk to your neighbor about this, don't just tell your neighbor the answer. If your neighbor is not convinced, you have to explain it to your neighbor. So. Oh, fountain pen, that's very nice. Mm-hmm. Did you get the answer?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Sorry? Yes. What did it? Well, make sure that all three of you agree, right? Okay, so do we all know the answer by now? You don't? Okay. Let's see. So let's, oh God, that's the wrong end. Okay, let's, so this is, let's express our number in a polar form. Okay? Now suppose, so let's, so this equation then becomes, so this is just one way of looking at it, right? This is my way of looking at it. So if you look at the function on the right-hand side, suppose you fix r, but you keep theta variable, then what the function on r, on the right-hand side represents is a circle around minus 1. So of radius r. So this is, suppose this is r, you fix some radius. This is what the right-hand side, you know, function represents. So on the left-hand side, we have a circle of the same radius, but located at plus 1, right? And because they're the same radius, they meet on the imaginary axis. So that was for one fixed r. So as we increase r, the circle, the radii of these two circles, they just get bigger and bigger. But their point of intersection is still going to be on the imaginary axis, right? For r equal to 1, it's the origin, these two points coalesce. So the locus of these of this of is basically the imaginary axis. So this was an easy one. You can find out the answer just by looking at this equation. Now, I wanted to do another one, but I couldn't really come up with a cool way of, like, I was tired last night. I couldn't really figure out a cool way of doing the next one, but you can figure this out yourself. Algebraically, you can show that this is a circle, but can you come up with an argument like that? You know, an informal argument, which doesn't require doing the algebra. So this is your homework that you don't have to turn in, because I wanted to do another problem. Sorry, somebody says something? So find the points that satisfy this, okay? This is something I'd like you to look at. No, this is. I feel so powerful, but it's not working. Okay, next we are going to just, we have probably time for just one more thing. And I want to talk about an application of de Moivre's theorem. So can you show using de Moivre's theorem that tan of theta, 4 theta, so you, I mean, in some time in middle school, you learn all these trigonometric identities, right? Involving sine and cosine and plus and it's just a long list, just goes on forever. And you know, you have to have all these tricks of, like, you know, replacing theta by 2 theta and blah, blah. You know, I just found that really boring. until, you know, I discovered complex numbers and all of these identities, essentially, because of the Euler formula, they become a lot more manageable. So how would you go about, you know, proving something like this using complex numbers? I would like you to think about it, and you know the routine by now. Yes. Yes, the little wiggle. Sorry, I'm not used to writing on blackboard, so my blackboard handwriting is not what it should be. So what you'll need for this is the binomial theorem. Yes. Yeah, use de Moivre. Oh, Yeah. Derive, like, start from this sine of 4 theta by sine cosine of 4 theta, and then, you know, do this. But, you know, but use this. I mean, I kind of gave you away the strategy, right? Gave away the strategy. To ask you again, how do you pronounce your name? Shen Yu?
Yeah.
Shen Yu. And you are?
Ruben.
Sorry?
Ruben.
Ruben. Oh, yes, Belgium. So how are we doing? Okay, so maybe we should. Yeah, I see people are still working, so give it a few more minutes. So those who are done, for them, I would like to, so those who are still working on it, please keep on working on it, but those who are done, I'd like you to find the cube root of minus one. So essentially, you know, solve the equation, solve, find z when z cubed is, so what is z? What are z, I should say. So is that a Nexus?
Samsung.
Ah, you should have gone with the Apple product, man.
No.
No. Even though it costs like five times as much, and it's,
so
you
bad.
Know, it's outdated by a new product in 2 weeks.
I wouldn't.
You should still go for Apple.
I would have gotten the Nexus 7, but the screen's too small, so I'm still used to the tiny screen.
Right.
Google comes.
Right. Is the Nexus the first? Sorry, I shouldn't really talk about Google products while I'm in class. But okay. Can we
start without using any other thing?
Oh, right. Okay.
Like,
so
whatever I do, I'll be using whatever formula.
So on the right-hand side, if you expand that as a, you know, as a binomial series, then you will get imaginary part and real part.
Yeah.
So you identify the imaginary part with the imaginary part, real part.
Okay.
So that way you get.
Yeah.
And then you just take the ratio and you're done.
Okay.
Yeah. Just a random example of power of complex numbers. So, I mean, today's class is more like this random stuff. Okay. You're working on the next one? Yeah, minus one. Is that unity or no?
Well,
sorry, I couldn't follow your question.
Isn't that an equation for the cube roots of unity?
Unity would, no, that
oh,
would be plus one. Yeah, so cube root of minus unity. Okay. Doing everything on your computer? Are you like a real-time LaTeX person or no? Are you a real-time LaTeX person? Because we used to have a student a few years ago who was a real-time LaTeX person. Like, he'd never used pen and paper. So, okay, unfortunately, that's where we have to end today. But I'm still around, so you don't have to leave. If you still have work to do, you can stay around. But officially, the class is over. And you have a 15-minute break before Anna starts telling you all about algebra. But thanks for indulging in the new method.
Are you posting notes for tonight?